on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Monday edition of InvestTalk. It is April 27, 2015. And we're dedicated to enabling you to become an above-average investor. That's what we do, but we need your input. You help us keep us on track, answering the questions that are important to you instead of important to us, covering the topics that you want to talk about. At least that's what I hope to do. But you can set the pace of the show. And I welcome all the radio listeners and all the podcast audience out there. I appreciate that. We're very pleased with the number who download our show every day. That's great. Excuse me. Speaking of different topics that I want you to call and ask about, our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference this past weekend delved into investment opportunities around the world, overvalued U.S. stocks making us a little hesitant, and so we looked around the world to see if there's other places to be. That was in San Jose just this last Saturday. And we tried to design a program that would allow you to understand the developing trends or seek a way to compare value in different parts of the world, different stocks, and different kinds of equities, and even currencies, which is extremely important when you're investing in emerging markets or European markets or frontier markets. Currency translation is extremely important, and we talked about that. Now, this past Friday, as always, our premium newsletter went out. It goes out every Friday. It's designed to be pretty concise. I try to make it pretty concise and to the point. Helpful hints in there, different couple stock ideas, or what's going on in the market and economy today, that kind of thing. And just trying to keep you up to date. Anyways, this is InvestTalk, everybody. Love to talk to you. I'd always, we always put in that newsletter, by the way, Consumer Watch also, which this last one I thought was pretty interesting. Warning signs of a bad financial advisor. So I thought that was pretty apropos, and we just did that on Friday. Now, if you'd like to try the newsletter, you don't have to buy it for a year. You can buy it 1 month at a time. It's less than $10 a month, and it comes out every Friday. Every Friday. So take a look at it. Go to InvestTalk.com to sign up. Here on InvestTalk, we try to answer your questions with our 24-hour listen line. You can talk to us live Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific Time, 888-99-CHART. How do you reach us? And you can do it anytime you want.
Hi, Steve. This is Sean from New York. I have a question regarding the effect of compounding, your interest of compounding money and investments with compounding increase. I don't know how me as an investor can take advantage of that. If I wanted to invest in ETFs or mutual funds, would I be able to take advantage of that and have my money increasing with the power of compounding, or there should be like investment in certain type of investments only that would offer you that effect? If you could maybe talk about that a little bit in your next show, I will be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Well, compounding means you're just reinvesting the dividends, and you're compounding your investment by that. And you could do that with ETFs, or you could do it with mutual funds. You just reinvest it constantly. The most common way to do it on an individual stock basis is through a DRIP, D-R-I-P, Dividend Reinvestment Plan. That's the most common way to do it. But you could do it in any way. The important thing is to continue to invest. And all the dividends you get, no matter where they're from, either a high dividend paying ETF or a stock, just reinvest that money back into the market. Don't take it out and spend it. And that will, you're looking for compound returns. And that means don't take the money out. Reinvest it. Continually reinvest the money. That's the important thing to do. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Did you see what the market did today? Well, pretty interesting. The Dow was down 41, the Nasdaq down 32, and the S&P down 9. The market was up in the morning. I don't know if you noticed that, and then kind of trailed off. I don't remember what part of the day it trailed off, but it kind of trailed off during the day. So one day, it did not make a trend, but the market is having trouble at these highs. It's at highs, and it's having trouble penetrating them and moving forward. The last few times that it's gotten to these points of this year, it's sold off. So we'll just have to watch for that. Baby boomers are buying annuities at record numbers, but they may not fully understand what they're buying. Annuities are pretty tempting. We're going to talk about that. It's going to be the main talking about point today. Why is the Chinese stock market rising when the economy isn't? I'm going to talk about that. And will the Fed hesitate raising rates? Remember, they've said they're going to raise rates this year. But maybe have you looked at the earnings out? I mean, we're beating estimates, but how are they compared to a year ago earnings? And what will the Fed do? And finally, money managers are getting cautious. There was a Barron's poll, newspaper poll. And investors, many money managers are getting cautious. So we'll talk about that too. 888-99-CHART is our number. Those are our talking points we're going to discuss. What's on your mind? What are value stocks? What makes them different than growth stocks? Why are earnings so important? Does that mean earnings per share? What is your question on this Monday afternoon? What do you want to talk about? I'll try to answer any financial questions. 888-99-CHART is how you can reach us. You can do it right now on InvestTalk.
And I'm back. This is Justin Klein. Steve opened the show for me because on my way here, there was a very large accident, and Steve covered for me. Got to our studio, so we can do the. I can do the show for you guys on this Monday edition of Invest Talk. And our main talking point today is about annuities, but there's also some other things I want to talk about. I know Steve had China market. He had some other talking points that you can potentially get to, but I want to talk a little bit about buybacks. I think this is really important. Share buybacks. Where's the money coming from in the market? How is the market staying up? You have earnings now expected to fall. GDP growth is decelerating. You know, the economic numbers are soft, but the stock market hasn't been reflecting that. And there's some very interesting statistics when it comes to buybacks, and just as politicians are mesmerized by the polls, right, of what the polls are saying, CEOs are enslaved to share prices. And today's bull market is sustained by one key ingredient, and that's share buybacks. It's really all it is. America's buyback boom may not be a crisis of capitalism, but it is a warning sign. Now, when companies put their chips on financial engineering, they are betting really against their future. And I think this is something we really need to talk about and people need to understand about this market. This year, U.S. buybacks are on course for the first time to exceed $1 trillion. $1 trillion. And that's not just one, a couple sectors. It's broad-based, from Apple to Pepsi. CEOs in all sectors live in fear of the activist investor. It's really the aged activist investor because they worry that a big activist investor will come in and vote them out, right? They'll get boards, they'll buy enough shares, get a seat on the board, vote them out, and they'll lose their job. So they fear the activist investor. They do kind of what the activist wants them to do, which as an investor, the activist investors are all about the short-term gain. They care about making money as quickly as possible. Fastest ROI. Not what's best for the company in the long run. And so what happens is they're fearful of these activist investors and they do share buybacks. They issue massive dividends. Things like that that help are good for shareholder value in the short term, but they're usually bad for the company value over the long term. Now, buybacks have been a rising percentage share of profits for more than 30 years, and last year the S&P 500 companies' margins on their operating margins on their own made up 95% of share buybacks. So operating profits from companies in the S&P 500, 95% of that went right back into share repurchases or dividend payouts. And to judge by the activity since the beginning of the year, buybacks are on course to exceed 100% percent of profits in 2015. Now, last year, the volume of buybacks was $550 billion, according to Bloomberg. And the money coming into the market, mostly into mutual funds and ETFs, that was just $85 billion. Think about that. $550 billion is coming from share buybacks. $85 billion is coming from an actual outside investors coming into the market. And actually, this year, if you look at it, investors are withdrawing money from the market, even though buybacks continue at a strong pace. And Larry Fink, the head of Blackstone, which is one of the large, is the CEO of one of the largest investment companies out there, he wrote a letter to the 500 S&P chief CEOs this month. Accused America's business leaders of eating their own seed corn. And he says, more and more corporate leaders have responded with actions that can deliver immediate returns to shareholders while underinvesting in innovation, skilled workforces, or essential capital expenditures necessary to sustain long-term growth. And you can easily see why this is happening. Rates are so low, money is easy, money is cheap, and the earnings yield on stocks are higher than what they're paying on their debt. So it's immediately accretive to earnings. It reduces the shares outstanding. And it drives up earnings per share, but it doesn't deliver for the shareholder over the long term. And this is a big problem. To me, this is a giant red flag for the market, that all the money coming to the market is through buybacks. Share buybacks. That's not a healthy way for the market to go higher. It should be confident outside investors, big institutional investors putting money in the market. And historically, buybacks tend to come at poor time, not good times, at poor times to be reinvesting in their business. So this is something that I think everybody should understand and keep an eye out for. Now, InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask us on the next InvestTalk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. My name's Gary. I'm calling from Massachusetts. I listen to your show by podcast. And my question today is about a bank in New York, White Plains, New York. The symbol is SBNY, Signature Bank. I'd like to know your opinion on that stock. Thank you very much. Enjoy your show. Take care.
This is Signature Bank Corp. This is a holding company for Signature Bank operating through 27 offices in the New York metropolitan area. I like the general sector that this is in. It's a regional bank, not a big national bank. And the reason is because these big banks who have huge assets, they are the ones that are being subject to more regulation, etc. Not that, you know, Signature Bank and other regional banks aren't also, but they're subject to less, and I like that. So they're going to now be able to compete a little bit better with the bigger banks, I think, over the long run. So I think that's smart. Earnings are going up about 20% year over year. You have sales going up about the same. Earnings has to go up 17% this year, 16% next year. P/E ratio is 21. It's not super cheap, but it's not super expensive either. You have, negative free cash flow. I don't like that. You have decent return on equity. I like that. I would say it's okay. I like the sector. I like the growth. I don't like the valuation. Profitability is worrisome for me. So I would give it maybe a 6 out of 10. You know, not too excited. I think there's probably better regional banks out there. Now, it's easy to try our handy risk analysis tool. Just answer some straightforward questions, and in about 3 minutes, you'll be assigned a risk number. This will help you match up your portfolio and your risk in your present portfolio. Just look for the free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next InvestTalk, only 38% have analyzed how their savings would translate into a regular paycheck in their retirement years. We'll talk about how to create retirement income for the long haul,
That's our talking point for Tuesday, April 28th, and we hope you'll be listening then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question each and every weekday on Invest Talk. And, you know, we take questions from the very beginner, if you don't have a lot of experience, to the very complex. You know, that's what we do every day. We deal with the complex nature of the markets. We've been doing this for decades, and we know how to handle that stuff. So whatever level of experience you have, we can field any of those questions. You have about 35 minutes left in the show to get your call in, but we do encourage you to do it sooner rather than later. Now, our main talking point today is about the baby boomers buying annuities in record numbers. And, you know, annuities are insurance products that offer guaranteed lifetime income, and they sound great. And they are appropriate for certain people, but it's a very, very small percentage of people, much smaller than the number of people that actually buy these products. Now, there's some good tips for making sure that if you are looking at an annuity, you're doing your homework. You're doing the proper homework necessary. So first is, know why you're buying an annuity in the first place. Now, annuities are meant to be a safety net to supplement your traditional portfolio. They're not something you should put all your money in. I think most people shouldn't have any money in annuities, but if you have the inkling or the temptation to buy an annuity, it should be a small portion of your total portfolio. You know, it's a diversifier. With stocks zig, annuities will zag, that type of thing, right? Now, the second, make sure the benefit of your annuity fits your needs. If you're married, get a joint annuity, which if the spouse dies, you still maintain that payout. A lot of married people are sold single annuities because they pay higher, but that increases your risk of losing, you know, all that payout. Remember, annuities are sold by insurance companies who have actuaries that know the odds of when you're going to pass, how long you're going to live, and what makes sense for them to pay you and to do it profitably. Okay. Then, number three, shop for annuities with at least three financial firms and make sure at least one of them is independent. Meaning they're not tied to an insurance company or a specific broker dealer. They are independent. They can shop around themselves and compare a lot of different companies, at least three. Then compare the types of annuities. There's many types. There's variable annuities, there's index annuities, there's fixed annuities, and there's immediate annuities. To me, the two types of annuities, the only type I would ever recommend for anybody is a fixed annuity and immediate annuity. Variable annuities, index annuities, just high fee products for the insurance company to sell. They sound great. They'll push you towards them. The sales brochures will talk a lot about them, but won't necessarily be the right thing for you most likely. And then lastly, the fees. The fees, figure out, make sure you understand the fees. These are complex documents. Don't get lost. And make sure you understand the surrender fees as well. That's the biggest problem. Most people don't know that you're locked into these things for many years. And the surrender fees can range from 1% to up to 20% of the money you put in. So don't ignore that, because that's usually the biggest problem people have. They want to sell it. They need that money. And they're going to have to take a big hit to do so. Now, your questions come first. Our first job is to answer your questions. Whether you're a beginner or experienced investor, we're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve, Justin. This is Miguel calling from Germany. I have a question on US Silica, ticker symbol SLCA. I got this at the beginning of March, and I was very delighted with the rally it had from mid-March to, let's say, last week. But last week it has been going down, and I'm wondering, why is that happening? And if there is anything that I could have seen in the chart that could have hinted to this going down, and maybe if it's a good opportunity to buy more stock or if I just should be patient. Thank you very much.
All right, he's looking at US Silica Holdings. They produce commercial silica used in a variety of applications, including glass, fillers, chemicals, and ceramics. You probably don't kind of understand the full spectrum of what they do, but mainly they're driven by the shale industry. They've fallen dramatically from the mid 70s or so back in September down to the low 20s back in December, and now they're at about $34 a share. And the reason they've rallied in March and the beginning of April was because of oil prices. And then over the past week or two, oil prices have kind of stagnated, even though they had a good day today. And you ask what on the chart could tell you that it was ready for a pullback? Well, I could tell you easily. It hit resistance. It hit a previous breakdown area where it broke down and now it retests that area. That's a classic resistance area. Something you should know. If you're trading stocks, you need to know these things. If you're doing trading short term, medium term, you need to know these things. So it did have a pullback. It's a natural pullback. It's not unhealthy by any stretch of the imagination. I think you're fine. Numbers look good, profitability is good, good dividend yield. I don't think there's anything too much to worry about as long as oil prices continue higher. Now, we talk about inflation, but what are the effects of deflation? We'll have a definition coming up in the next half hour on InvestTalk 101. I'm portfolio manager Justin Klein, and I hope you'll stay with us on InvestTalk. Eight 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 99 chart 888-992-4278. Give us a call. Ask your question. I know you have something on your mind when it comes to finances. Hopefully, I can answer that for you. Now, let's talk a little bit about REITs. REITs, REIT, real estate investment trusts. Hopefully, most people know what those are. And as 2015 opened, Marcus and Millchap, which is one of the largest commercial real estate brokerage companies in the country, I actually know somebody who works for them. They issued a report, an investor sentiment survey, and it is very, very bullish. It's well above the levels reached during the pre-crisis era. Now we're talking about commercial real estate. Nearly 70% of those surveyed plan to add commercial real estate to their portfolios, while a mere 6% intended to cut back. People are very, very bullish on the sector. And then another report, Tiger 21. It's an organization whose membership is comprised of ultra high net worth individuals. And the portion allocated to real estate is 27%. That exceeded the 25% in the bubble peak years of 2007. So you can see it's a sector where there's extreme bullishness. And this is worrisome because last time we were at these levels, things didn't work out too well. Now, obviously, there was different circumstances surrounding it. But you can see that the profitability measures for these REITs are not very attractive, not in the least. Most investors that are investing in REITs nowadays, they're looking at the yield. They're saying, okay, I'm getting 3 to 5%, somewhere in there for most REITs. And that's pretty good, right? I'm getting 3%, 5%. That's much better than the what? The 2%. What are we on the 10-year right now? Yeah, less than 2%, 1.92%. So people are attracted to the yield and they think it's safe. And for certain REITs, surely it is. But if you look at the sector as a whole, the P ratio is at about 35 to 40, depending on which index you're looking at, right? The price to book is at 2.4, price to sales 8 times, 20 times cash flow. That's crazy. That's way, way out of line. So if you're invested in the REIT sector and you think that this is an amazing time to be invested in real estate or REITs, you need to temper your expectations, because history tells us that this is a time you need to be more nervous than excited about the real estate sector. So just heed the warning. Let's check back with our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is the way to reach us anytime. Elaine called us from Corte Madera.
Well, my question is, I have some money to invest, and I'm undecided between infrastructure stocks or biofuels. And I know you can't talk about specific stocks, but give me your idea. What would you do? Like,
infrastructure stocks or biofuels? I would say infrastructure. I like infrastructure. Our country, our world is in need of infrastructure improvements. And, you know, biofuels, while, you know, I think they have a future, I think it's going to be constrained by the price of traditional fuels like oil and natural gas, and we have an abundance of them, and it's right now it's relatively cheap. And now global warming, you know, we can argue till the cows come home how important that is, but it's certainly something that governments around the world are trying to tackle. So I understand why you're looking at biofuels, but you have to look at the infrastructure we need in this country and around the world, in India, even in China, in a lot of countries around the world, and it's gravely needed. So there's going to be need to be at some point, there's going to be need to be money allocated to those type of companies, and that's why I would lean more towards infrastructure investments, because governments need to spend. You don't need biofuels. You may want biofuels. Things might be in the future might be pointing towards biofuels. But I'd rather go with what is definitely going to be needed in the future versus what might be needed in the future. So I would stick with infrastructure. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us. 888-992-4278. Now it's time for Invest Talk 101. Basics about investing. We're going to talk about deflation. What is deflation? Now, Investopedia helps us with their definition, and it says it's a general decline in prices often caused by reduction in supply of money or credit. Deflation can be caused also by a decrease in government, personal, or investment spending. Now, declining prices, if they persist, generally create a vicious spiral of negatives, such as falling profits, closing factories, shrinking employment and incomes, and increasing defaults on loans by companies and individuals. And that's what we saw back in 2008 during the financial crisis. All those things happened. Now, to counter deflation, the Fed can use monetary policy to increase the money supply and deliberately induce rising prices. And that's what they've done. They haven't really created inflation, but they've created what was called disinflation, where it's not deflation, it's not inflation, it's just a lack of inflation. Now, rising prices provide an essential lubricant for a sustained recovery, because businesses increase profits and take some of the depressive pressures off wages and debtors of every kind. It's easier to pay back debt when there's inflation. With deflation, right, there's a shrinking money supply. Prices are going down, meaning profits are going down, and they're paying more. Remember, they took out debt when profits were higher, when prices were higher. So it's harder to go back and pay that debt. That's why the economies want inflation. Central banks want inflation. Government wants inflation, because it's easier for them to pay back debt. Right? If the U.S. has a bunch of debt, and all of a sudden, prices go up, and nominal profits go up, means more taxes are being produced, and it's easier to pay back that debt. Now, deflationary periods can be both short or long, relatively speaking. Japan, for example, had a period of deflation lasting decades starting in the early 90s, and the Japanese government lowered interest rates to try and stimulate inflation to no avail. Sound familiar? Now, zero interest rate policy, also known as ZIRP, was ended in July of 2006, but that still has not helped them get out of their doldrums. And so something very similar is going on here in America. Really is. Not exactly the same, but similar. Now that's Invest Talk 101. Do you have a question about today's topic, about our talking points, about real estate, about the market, about different sectors, valuations, maybe foreign investing? We had a conference over the weekend last Saturday in the Bay Area talking about foreign investing. Should you be rebalancing your portfolio from domestic stocks into foreign markets? And if you are, where should you be putting that money? We talked about it last Saturday. Let's talk about it today. You're more than welcome to call and ask your question. Check in now at 888-99-CHART.
In a world that becomes more complex every day, our programs are designed to simplify the individual investment process. KPP Financial has simplified your choices. Take a look at our balanced income program for steady yield for the risk averse. It's one of the three programs designed to fit most needs from KPP Financial. See more about it on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Matt from Massachusetts. Love the show. Been listening to it for about a good month now. Very helpful. I've got a question for you. Can you give me some thoughts on the ETF fund XLE? And I'm also interested in your comments on the American Airlines stock symbol AAL.
All right, he's looking at XLE. This is the Energy Select Spiders ETF. It's a ETF comprised of oil companies, mainly exploration and production oil companies, some service companies as well. The top two holdings are ExxonMobil and Chevron. Number three is Schlumberger, which is the largest service company, where Exxon and Chevron are exploration and production companies, so there's a difference. Then you have Kinder Morgan, which is another E&P, EOG Resources, which is a large shale producer, ConocoPhillips, it goes down the list of big oil companies. I think it's a good one. I like the time, the stocks are cheap. The expense ratio on this is pretty low. I think it's, let's see, what is it, 0.15%. That's low. Good timing. I wouldn't put more than 10 to 12% of your portfolio in this one ETF, but I do think it is a good time to be invested in it, and I also think it's a good time to invest in oil stocks generally. And then he was asking about American Airlines. Not what I'd be investing in. Would not buy it. Very expensive. You have oil prices that are likely going to go higher. You have earnings supposed to go down 19% next year. Earnings or revenue starting to fall. I think your airlines traditionally have a very poor investment track record. And so I would not be buying American Airlines, especially up here at these prices. Let's go to Eric in San Francisco. How are you doing, Eric?
Hey, Justin. How's it going today?
Going well. What can I do for you?
Good. Hey, I wanted to ask you about Facebook stock. Mm-hmm. Recently reported a decent quarter last week. Seems like the market's sort of taking it in stride. Wanted to get your thoughts on it short term. The 52-week high was 86 and change, made at the end of March. Currently trading below 82. Just wondering if this is setting up for an entry point given where the market's at, and is it ready to break out?
Is it ready to break out? I don't think it is yet. If it can stay up here in the low 80s area for a while, maybe even dip into the high 70s, that's okay. But it needs to consolidate probably for another month and a half for me to be say that this is ready to break out. I'm not a big fan of Facebook. I think it's expensive. you're starting to run into the law of large numbers. Earnings grew only 20% last quarter, which is the lowest earnings growth it's been in a long time. Revenue growth has now dipped into the 40 range, about 42, which is also the lowest it's really been in a long time. And so, to me, it's still expensive. I wouldn't look at this until it gets to about $60 a share. Now it's at 81. I think that's a much better place to be invested in this stock. Short term, you know, like I said, it needs to consolidate more, but I think ultimately it gets to 60 before it gets to, say, 100.
Excellent. Thank you.
No problem, Eric. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Steve in San Jose. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, good. How you doing?
Doing well. What can I do for you?
Hey, I had a quick question. I guess I was calling. I was listening to you talk about real estate and how the market's kind of bullish on real estate in general, and you were kind of backing it up with be careful. I'm currently in a refinance, and I'm thinking about buying another investment property. I have one already. It's just like a single-family home. Mm-hmm. And I would be taking out the cash that I have in my as equity on my home that I have now. Mm-hmm. But you were kind of making it sound like it wasn't such a good idea to be in real estate now. I don't actually have cash. I only have equity. Mm-hmm. And what would it be smart to get another investment property, or should I just keep the equity in the home? I don't know that it makes sense to take it out to put it into stock.
So you sounds like you don't have a lot of substantial assets elsewhere.
No, only real estate.
Yeah. So were you invested in real estate at all back in 05, 06?
Uh-huh.
You were not?
Did I invest? No. I'm really young, so I've only been riding it from about 2010
so,
up.
Gotcha. So you didn't really get the full spectrum of that time frame, and we did. We were warning people back then of how this is not sustainable. Everything was overvalued. You can't have the type of earnings growth or price growth, talking about 15-20% a year and only 2% earnings growth, didn't make sense. And you have the exact same thing today. And what happened then was people were calling us and asking us, should I do this, exactly what you're asking me today? And we would say no, but a lot of people still did. And what they did is they just leveraged themselves into one asset class. And that is a horrible strategy. Absolutely potential disaster. So for me, I would say do not buy another investment property. You have one. You need to be building up your assets in other parts of the market, whether it's fixed income, stocks, whatever it is. That's where you should be focusing your efforts. Real estate is a far too big portion of your portfolio right now, and I would not be doing. I'd be not going into another investment property.
Okay. Do you think pulling equity out of real estate to get into other investments is a good or a bad idea?
Bad idea. Don't leverage yourself up. Just stay, make payments, and pay down that debt. They're coming up in the last segment. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. If you'd like to revisit our chart lessons, recorded webinars, or special watch lists, you can anytime you'd like if you're an InvestTalk insider. Now, this is not an extra cost premium program. It's free. Just sign up right now on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 5 minutes left in the show, so better call now. Apple released earnings after the bell, and it beat expectations. We had revenue growth of about 27% year-over-year. Earnings grew 33% year-over-year. Analysts had expected about $2.16 a share in profit. They came in at $2.33 a share. Revenues were at $58 billion and expectations were about $56 billion, and that's despite the headwinds from the strong dollar. 69% of revenues now come from overseas. That's pretty crazy. And their margins increased. It was at almost 41%, which is much higher than the expectations of about 40%, 39.5%, 40%. And they boosted their dividend 11%, its share repurchase program by $50 billion to $140 billion. And in all, Apple pledged to return $200 billion to shareholders through buybacks and dividends by March of 2017. It previously promised $130 billion. So that's another $70 billion increase. That's pretty crazy. That's almost a 50% jump in what it's expected to send back to shareholders via dividends and share buybacks. Now, despite the share repurchase, Apple's cash grew to $193.5 billion from $178 billion at the end of December. Pretty crazy quarter for Apple. Very, very good, but I think a lot of it is built in, so I don't think too much upside in the near term, but it was a strong quarter for Apple. Now let's answer one more question, one more of our listener line questions at 888-99-CHART. It's open 24 hours a day.
Hey, Stephen, Justin, I got a question for you. I'm interested in your thoughts on Berkshire Hathaway, BRK.B, and also thoughts on the mutual fund PMBPX. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your program.
PMBPX. Okay. Let's start with the mutual fund quickly, just because that's simple and easy to get to. Principal Midcap, it's a mid-cap growth fund. It's a good mid-cap growth fund, very good mid-cap growth fund. Probably not the best time to be in mid-cap growth. It's going to be very volatile. Don't expect, just because it's a good fund doesn't mean it's not going to be volatile. Great mutual fund to have in your list. Probably not the best time to be putting your money there. All right? So it's Principal Mid-Cap, quality mutual fund, mid-cap growth fund. And then he's asking about Berkshire Hathaway. Everybody knows about Berkshire Hathaway. It's Warren Buffett's company, right? And their numbers, let's check out their numbers. It's a very diversified company nowadays. But remember, Berkshire uses leverage through their insurance company, through Geico. So that helps profitability, modest debt amount, modest earnings growth, modest sales growth. P/E's 21, a little high for me, for my liking. I'd rather see it closer to the mid-teens would be a place where I would like to pick it up. It's been weak so far this year. It's peaked out in December, been making lower lows and lower highs pretty much throughout the year. We're starting to get into support here at 140. I probably wouldn't buy it until 130. I think that's a good place to pick it up, 130. It's at 140 now. So I'd pick up some, maybe a little bit more at 120, and every $10 increment, just pick up more. It's a great company. Nothing wrong with Berkshire Hathaway. You're going to do well long term. The big question is, what's a good entry point in the short to medium term? And it's starting to get there, but I think it needs another $10 of downside before I really get excited about Berkshire Hathaway, whether it's the A shares or the B shares. But don't think it won't be volatile, because back in 2008, it went from $100 a share down to 45 and change. So it's volatile. Their businesses are cyclical, and it's even more so now that they bought that big railroad company. I'm trying to remember the name off the top of my head, but they bought a big railroad company. And so they're going to be even more volatile. So I would, like I said, stay away from the short term, but long term, great to have in your watch list. And I would buy it 130 on down in $10 increments, add it a little bit to your portfolio. Now, before we close the hour, reminder that you can subscribe to our premium newsletter. I talked about it earlier this hour. It's just $9.99 a month, and it will keep you up to date on the market and offer you some useful information and perspective. Just go to investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.